Let me start with this, and it's a bit of a shocker. The biggest investment company in the history of the world, with assets of more than $10 trillion, with a T, dollars, has dropped the Ukraine fund. Why is that horrible news for Volodymyr Zelensky and good news for the people of Ukraine? I'm going to explain it to you. Also, there's a new poll that says Americans, like people all over the world, now agree with Palestinians over Israel. It's a huge shift. And it may be the reason that Netanyahu is going to America, one of the few places where he definitely will not be arrested. And the European power brokers who are backing Israel and backing Ukraine, by the way, are being told by their own people, stop spending so much money on foreign wars and think about us. Look at these scenes now coming out of Spain, of all places. And we are going to be joined right here by the former Fox News host and libertarian who hosts what is now one of the most popular programs on the entire internet. Judge Andrew Napolitano is going to be joining me live here, right on the Sanchez Effect. Let's do this. Hi, everybody. I'm Rick Sanchez. If we go by the premise that America is run by and ruled by money, it is, then there's really bad news for the Ukraine government and potentially good news for the people of Ukraine. Let me start with the good news. So why is it good news for the people of Ukraine? Think about it. Simple, really. Because as long as other people or other countries, and especially big money firms and corporations, pay off and control politicians in your country, in this case in Ukraine, you will never, as a citizen of that country, experience self-determination. That's just the way it works. That's the way it's always worked. For several decades now, big money, I mean big money, and corruption, and the influence of other countries like the United States, my country, the UK, the EU, they've had a stranglehold on Ukraine, stranglehold on that country. And that's what affects the people who live there. But look at this headline. Look at this. Here's the news. According to Bloomberg, BlackRock out. They say they're out. They are abandoning the Ukraine fund. And that announcement, by the way, is like a dead canary in a coal mine. It's really a really bad sign for the Zelensky government. You see, BlackRock is more than just a big company. It's as powerful, some would argue more so, than the White House, than Congress. So when BlackRock says the situation in Ukraine is unsalvageable, you can put money on that. You know why? Because they, BlackRock, are not putting money on it. Scott Ritter recently called Ukraine a hospice patient. I thought that was an interesting term for him to use. I heard it this morning. He says it's just a matter of time for Ukraine. Well, that thinking seems to be seeping in or catching on in the United States with President Trump, who now says, look, he's not going to risk putting good money on bad. He's not going to risk sending more weapons to Ukraine. But it's also a trend with a growing number of elected officials, apparently, unexpectedly. Look at this tweet from a Florida congresswoman. Her name is Anna Paulina Luna, who serves on the House Foreign Affairs Committee. And she, quote, she writes, I can promise there will be no weapons funding for you. We are not your piggy bank, she says to Ukraine. And then she goes on to say, negotiate for peace. Luna's angry, by the way, that Ukraine is attacking the Orthodox Church. She says that as a Christian, she's personally insulted by that action. All right, so what happens if the U.S. continues its newfound shunning of Ukraine? Well, Ukraine will continue courting or being courted by European countries who make up part of NATO and the EU. But there's a little bit of a problem with that plan. See, they have their own problems, big problems. In fact, I'm going to show it to you. Look at this. These protests that you're looking at in Madrid follow the pattern of others in Germany, France, and the UK. Citizens of those countries are tired of seeing their wages, and their benefits crashing, while more and more immigrants continue to pour into their communities as a result of a European foreign policy that spends hundreds and hundreds of billions of dollars in places other than their own backyard. All it takes is one incident. In this case, by the way, in Spain, it was a rape allegation. And the people of that community got angry about the rape allegation because apparently it was committed by an immigrant. And you know what you have in that situation? It's the same formula, by the way, that we saw in the UK, that we've seen in Germany, that we've seen in parts of Ireland. It's a perfect formula for a protest that then turns into a riot. And that's what's been happening there. We're going to follow it for you. Meanwhile, in America, there are no riots, at least not that we see there right now. But there is a growing trend toward a similar sense of, I don't know, I guess you can call it nationalism, or at least we can call it this, anti-foreign adventurism. Look at this poll. It's a new poll. It seemed to shock everybody. I'm going to show you a little video and a little bit of some folks over at CNN freaking out, as they often do, because they know so little over there. It reveals, this poll does, that most Democrats in America who used to be extremely pro-Israel are now like much of the rest of the world. They have, in fact, become pro-Palestinian. Here's that CNN clip.
In 2017, the Democratic Party was a pro-Israeli party. Look at this. They sympathized with the Israelis by 13 points, more with the Israelis than the Palestinians. But look at this sea change. Now Democrats sympathize more with the Palestinians by 43 points. Oh, my God, that is a change in the margin of 56 points over the course of just 8 years. So all of a sudden, it's the pro-Palestinian position that actually reigns supreme in Democratic politics.
Oh, but that, you know, that's about to change. That's about to change. You know what? When we come back, we're going to break down for you what that means. And the reason I say it's going to change is because Bibi Netanyahu is going to America. And he's going to personally convince all Americans that they should hate the Palestinians and love him again. Can he do that? We're going to be right back. You stay right there, because we're going to be joined by Andrew Napolitano, the judge. The court will be in session. We'll be right back.
Talking to you all.
That technology should work for people.
A robot must obey the orders given it by human beings, except where such orders would conflict with the first law.
Show your identification.
We should be very careful about artificial intelligence.
The point, obviously, is to create trust rather than fear.
I would like to take on various jobs.
I mean, with artificial intelligence, we are summoning the demon.
A robot must protect its own existence as own existence.
Hey, just an update. We are going to be looking at BRICS in a little while, and Mr. Lavrov, our foreign minister of Russia, is going to be speaking, or is speaking. If there's any news that comes out of what he has to say, we're going to turn that around for you right away. We'll be following most of BRICS here throughout our coverage. Now, Andrew Napolitano, he is the judge. He's the host of Judging Freedom. Great title for a show. I'm a fan. It's probably one of the most popular podcasts on the internet right now. He's a former New Jersey Superior Court judge, and he's good enough to join us now to take some time to talk about some. In fact, I should tell you something. So this morning I was jogging over these bridges in Moscow. This place is filled with bridges, and it's kind of fun if you're an old guy like me and you're trying not to be too fat. And I took you with me. I take you with me almost every morning. I love your show. And that's where I got that Ritter line, where Ritter says that Ukraine was a hospice patient, because he told you that on your last episode, as a matter of fact. Judge, thanks so much for joining us. It's so nice to see you.
Rick, it's a pleasure to be with you. It's a pleasure to see you. It's such fond memories of our former lives together. But congratulations on all your good work. And it's just a joy to be on your show. Thank you, my dear friend.
You know, I'm glad you said that, because you just reminded me of something. I think it was Tucker who said this recently, either with me or with someone else. But he said, guys like you, guys like me, guys like Tucker, we were all expelled. We were bad students. We didn't play by the rules. You used to be on Fox. He used to be on Fox. I was on CNN and MSNBC. Tucker was also on CNN. In fact, he and I worked together. What does that say that guys like us, who I think aren't bad people, we love our craft, we love the truth, we try and stand for it, no longer have a home in those places, and we have to seek alternative methods of telling our truths?
Well, as you pointed out with the poll that you just showed, the tide may very well be turning. I mean, the institutional mainstream American billionaire-owned media will soon be learning a lesson that your audience, my audience, Ritter's audience, Professor Jeffrey Sachs's audience, these audiences are bigger, more meaningful, more into the truth than the pabulum that that those entities, Fox and CNN, have been feeding. It is kind of interesting that you and Tucker and I were all bounced for the same reason, which is telling the truth as we understood it when that truth was against the grain of ownership. It wasn't against reality. It was reality, but it was against the grain of what ownership wanted to spoon feed the viewers, and they couldn't deal with it.
Yeah, you know, Ukraine is a good example of that. When I first started seeing, McGregor was the first guy who I heard say, everything they're telling us about Ukraine is bullcrap. And I was like, is this guy high? What's he talking about? He can't be right. And then I started doing my own research, like most Americans. I didn't know. And Doug was right. And you know, now, I mean, that's why I listen to you, because I want to hear Mearsheimer, and I want to hear Ritter, and I want to hear Doug and you discuss these things, that it's the only place you can find out what's really going on. Although last week it was Reuters and the West that broke the story that Lugansk is now under Russian control and Donetsk is soon to follow. So I guess eventually they catch up, but they're like a year late.
Right. I mean, at some point, they can deny reality, but they cannot avoid the consequences of denying reality. So at some point, they're going to have to say what is happening on the ground. Ritter is 100% correct. The Zelensky regime, because you can't call it a government, it's not a government, it's just a regime, is on life support, and it's only a question of time. My hat is off to President Putin, whose patience is just extraordinary. He could end this thing tomorrow, but he wants to produce as little damage and cause as little death as can possibly happen. But they can't go on. The regime just can't go on much longer. Trump has dialed back the weapons that are going there. He has not dialed back the military intelligence. There are still 20 CIA stations in Ukraine. They have not yet been destroyed by the Russians. Carefully, the Russians know where they are and could have destroyed them. The Russian military has respected them. The United States is a co-belligerent with Ukraine. France is a co-belligerent with Ukraine. Germany is. Great Britain is. But the Russian military has fastidiously avoided attacking any of those Western assets. But very soon, there'll be nothing left of that regime. Ritter's 100% correct. President Putin will be rewarded for his patience.
I think Scott also mentioned, though, that the fact that the Americans are not giving the Ukrainians the Patriot missiles or any of other defense systems that they use to belie or at least control the Russian airspace is a big deal, and it is making a difference, right?
Yes. Yes, it is. And I don't know what happened in the conversation between Presidents Putin and Trump, but my guess is President Putin was steadfast, ticked off the five or six conditions that are necessary in order for the war to end. President Trump asked for some sort of a favor, and he did not get it.
Yeah. Well, it's pretty simple, isn't it? I mean, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to figure out Russia's conditions are pretty simple. We don't want European troops on the ground in Ukraine. We want Ukraine to be a sovereign country. And we want to make sure that there's no other infrastructure in that country other than Ukraine's. So, I mean, pretty simple stuff. And I don't
know. This was agreed to between Russia and Ukraine in a 126-page document in Istanbul in the spring of 2022. Every page was initialed by both sides until Joe Biden, President Biden at the time, sent British Prime Minister Boris Johnson to talk Zelensky out of it, saying, don't worry, we have your back. We resist the Russians. You don't have to cave like this. What a deal they could have had and turned down because they listened to the Americans and they listened to the British. And it's been a catastrophe for them. I don't know how Zelensky escapes this, really. He has the hard nationalists on his right saying you can't cave, you can't give in, you can't negotiate, you can't sue for peace. But they have nothing left.
You know,
soon their military will be gone.
One of the things in this that frustrates me, and I even heard Mr. Trump refer to this the other day, they keep talking about, and I guess these idiot reporters who don't understand the situation here and don't understand what the causality is of this conflict, and they keep talking about, well, don't worry, because the Europeans, the French, the UK, the Germans are going to put peacekeepers on the ground after this thing. Like, that's the reason this thing started. The last thing the Russians want is to have Germans and French guys who are soldiers in Ukraine, right? I mean, it's like, duh.
If they do that, they'll last about a week, and then they'll be gone. They'll either skedaddle back home or they'll be carried back home in body bags. There's no question about it. The whole thing started in 2014 when the American CIA and the British MI6 decided we're going to overthrow the properly elected government of Ukraine, a truly popularly elected government of Ukraine, and we're going to stage a coup, and we're going to put NATO there, and we're going to aim missiles at Moscow, and we'll teach those Russians a lesson. That's how all of this started. And Rick, the neocons, the Lindsey Grahams, the Ted Cruzes of America, they still haven't learned their lesson. Yeah. There's a million Ukrainians dead, and they still haven't learned their lesson.
Yeah, and you got guys like Starmer and, you know, Macron, who are, you know, having eating birthday cakes with Zelensky and calling him in for NATO meetings and promising they got his back, and all he's got to do is put the soldiers up there. They'll supply the money and the weapons, and we can keep this going for 5 years, the other day Ruta told him. 5 more years, he said.
Well, pretty soon, again, back to Ritter, pretty soon the government will collapse, the military will collapse, President Putin will have been proven right from day one, and all those neocons will have been proven wrong. Donald Trump is very shrewd. He'll take credit. He'll say, see, I saved half of Ukraine. You know, I know him well, as you know, and I'm just predicting how he's going to think. I disagree with him on so many things, but I know the way he thinks. He can often turn a lemon into lemonade.
And you're right. And by the way, you mentioned this, you alluded to this a little while ago to this, but he's certainly better than the alternative, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
By a long shot. Let's talk about Israel. So you've got Bibi there in Washington arriving soon, or did he arrive already? I'm not even sure.
I'm pretty sure he's here. It's 10:50 in the morning here, and I believe they're scheduled to have lunch. He'll be having lunch with the president, with the arch-Zionist Christian nationalist Mike Huckabee, my former colleague at Fox, who is the U.S. ambassador to Israel, flew with the prime minister. I will also tell you that there will be several Mossad agents at lunch who will give the president of the United States the Netanyahu version of things in Iran in an effort to gin him up again to send more American bombs there. Forget about what the CIA says. Forget about what the American intelligence community consensus is. It's Mossad that Trump will listen to.
Well, why do you even need Mossad agents when you have the director of the CIA, the director of CENTCOM, and Susie Wiles, who, according to your friend and mine, Max Blumenthal, already are connected to Israel and the Mossad and are the ones who tell the president what to do and what the intel is and who he can or can't speak to?
Rick, for the first time in American history, the director of the Central Intelligence Agency is an asset of a foreign country. Wow. It is John Ratcliffe is an asset of Israel.
Damn.
Now, I don't know if Trump recognizes that. I don't know if Trump looks at them that way. They've excluded Tulsi Gabbard because she has had some rational thoughts about Israel, not all the time, but occasionally. Mm-hmm. She's had rational thoughts about the accuracy of American intel. But Ratcliffe is the guy. And of course, he says whatever his good buddy David Barnea, the head of Mossad, wants him to say. It's a direct pipeline directly to the president of the United States, bypassing American security and bypassing American intel.
Do you think, it seems to me anyway, and I've seen it coming for a while, and you've got your handle on the pulse of our country as much as anybody does, that Americans are getting wise to this. I sense the average American starting to get a little pissed off about what's going on in his country and that, you know, the situation in Ukraine, the situation in Israel, the bloodbath genocide that's taking place in Gaza. People even like, you know, our dads would look at this and say, OK, this is too much. Do you sense that?
My dad would have said he weeps for the 39 sailors on the USS Liberty that were murdered by the Israelis and the 150 or so that were injured, and then how they all had to zip their lips. My father, who was in the Navy in World War II, had a very sore, soft spot in his heart, but sore spot over what happened in 1967. He died a few years ago, so he didn't see the genocide in Gaza, but he is a patriotic and an American as can be, a chain-smoking lover of the New York Giants and the New York Yankees, and went to mass every Sunday, blue collar. I'm giving you an image of him. Yeah. Would have condemned what Netanyahu is doing.
Yeah, it's hard not to, you know? It's hard not to. And, you know, I had a long conversation with Max about this the other day. You know, Max, unlike you and I are Catholics, he's a Jewish American and a wonderful, wonderful, upright man who believes it's
one of the smartest people I've ever known.
And driven by his...
And one of the most courageous.
Yeah, driven by his... He told me he's driven by his faith to be a truth teller. I said, Max, you're a courageous guy with your reporting. And he goes, it's because I'm a Jew that I tell these stories. And the harm that this man is causing me and others like me all over the world is incredible, like nothing we've seen. I think he's right. I mean, people keep saying, I think I heard you say this today, this morning, whenever you did it, but when I was jogging with you over the Moscow Bridge, you said that, in fact, there are Israel and Netanyahu's policies and the Israeli right-wing policies are causing more harm to Jews and people from Israel than anything else that's going on in the world right now for them.
Correct. Correct. Jeffrey Sachs has referred to Bibi Netanyahu as the most dangerous Jew in the history of the world, who has caused more destruction to the Jewish people just to keep himself out of jail. I'll say it again, just to keep himself out of jail.
I hope Mr. Trump doesn't get involved in that. I mean, I have you watched the Bibi Files? It's a pretty good documentary. I watched it about a week ago.
I have watched it. I'm aware of what Trump said a few weeks ago. You might hear it again today. Fortunately, they have a true independent judiciary because Bibi lost his efforts to stack the decks in his favor. And that independent judiciary couldn't care less what Donald Trump thinks about these prosecutions. They are real serious prosecutions. And the minute he's no longer the prime minister, he'll be in the dock. Where the defendant stands in criminal cases.
Yeah, because I saw in the documentary, they make it quite clear that some of the things he and his wife have done are extremely corrupt.
Well,
and
she has already absconded. She's living in Miami with their son, protected by Mossad. At the expense of the Israeli government, which is reimbursed by the American government, of course.
Yeah. How much money does the Israeli lobby actually give to politicians in the United States, would you suspect?
Oh, you know, I don't know the number, but if you Google APEC U.S. Congress, you will see more than half the House and more than half the Senate actually have their faces there on the APEC website. So you can donate through APEC directly to members of Congress. How else can you explain Netanyahu receiving 58 standing ovations in a 56-minute talk? The loudest and longest standing ovation was when he condemned free speech. He condemned Americans who were protesting the genocide right outside the Capitol building. Two of them were friends of ours, Colonel Lawrence Wilkerson and the great Ray McGovern. They were, and Max, the three of them were actually in the demonstration outside the Capitol when Bibi condemned them. And all those Republicans stood and applauded. What a disgrace.
Yeah.
They took an oath to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution, which includes the freedom of speech.
Well, like Ted Cruz says, you know, the most important thing that I do as a elected official in the United States is protect the rights of Israel. That's what he says.
Yes.
I told that to Tucker. I was like, really? Okay. America first, huh? By the way, BlackRock today, I led with this today because I was fascinated by it, and people don't understand the power of a company like that. The fact that BlackRock, has decided that they're no longer going to fund the Ukraine fund, or they're going to get the hell out of the Ukraine fund. I was telling my viewers, I think that's huge, even more important than a military assault.
Agreed, because they're not going to waste a nickel, and they know that it's not worth investing in there anymore. That is a tremendous, tremendous turnaround. It's also the type of turnaround that'll resonate with the president. You know, he doesn't always think clearly. He often changes his mind, but he knows how to deal with a dollar.
Mm-hmm. Final thoughts. You know, I'm here. I think it's important for people like me and others to go around the world and understand how the rest of the world thinks and what leaders in countries like this one say. You know, when you and I worked at Fox and CNN and those places, Putin would give a news conference, or Xi would give a news conference, or Modi would give a news conference. We'd never know what they say unless they were made fun of on Saturday Night Live. Don't you think we need more of this? We need to reach out.
Yes, we do. You provide a tremendous service. I'm privileged to have great guests on my show who draw enormous audiences. I was invited to question Foreign Minister Lavrov, and I did that, and I walked through restaurants in Moscow, and people came up and said hello to me because, not me, but because they recognize what happens with alternative media in the United States when you can expose another way of thinking, and when you can show the American people how people in other countries think, how very much alike Russians and Americans are in their aspirations, their family lives, what they want for themselves, their children, and their grandchildren. When I came back from Moscow, it took me weeks to, I was so giddy with happiness at what I had seen. Mm-hmm. It took me weeks to get it out of my system. I couldn't stop talking about it.
There are in many ways the things that we want to be, imperfect, of course, but in many ways you don't see some of the things we see in our society here. You don't see the crime. You don't see the homelessness. You don't see many of those things. And in fact, this last week I was invited to be the keynote speaker at a July 4th celebration where I watched 300-some people sing I'm Proud to Be in America, Lee Greenwood song. And I was thinking, you know, they like Americans here. And you go into stores and they're playing music in English and stuff. And it's like, we don't do that. And it's too bad that not enough people know that, because.
Yeah, my wish, and I really think this will happen, is that President Putin and President Trump will agree to a grand reset.
Yes.
Which will allow cultural, political, financial, economic, commercial exchange between the two countries as we once had. and this nonsense with the sanctions that came about under Biden, which have been continued under Trump, let's face it,
will
one day go away.
Yeah. Yeah, but I think it was the New York Times that said the other day, the problem with Trump is he hasn't increased the sanctions or put in new ones. It's like, really?
Oh, God.
Leave it to the New York Times. Hey, Judge.
Some things never change.
what a pleasure. Thank you so much. You've been so kind to give us your time. We certainly appreciate it, and we'll be looking forward to talking to you soon.
You've been so kind to expose me to your great audience. Thank you, Rick. One of these days, I'm going to surprise you and show up in your studio.
Oh, that'll be great. We've got a spot for you right here. And say hi to the boys back there. And anytime you want me to reciprocate, I'll be happy to do it, all right?
You got it. Thank you, my friend. All the best.
God bless. Take care. And that's it for us. But I do want to give you a program note. Mr. Lavrov has been speaking in Brasilia. And we have been following it for you. We will expect to be able to bring you his entire commentary as we follow it here on RT throughout the rest of our program day and our schedule. And we'll be looking forward to seeing you again here tomorrow. In the meantime, you could catch me on my podcast where I interview people like those we mentioned, Scott Ritter and Colonel Doug McGregor and Tucker Carlson, et cetera. My podcast is called Journalistically Speaking. Check it out. And you can find me on Twitter or X @RickSanchezTV. We'll be looking for you next time. Good night.